He's tough. He's uncompromising. Plowing in with Terry Wallace.
For the new Golden Herb Schnitzel sub from Subway.
Terry live this afternoon from the Adelaide Oval, who's also taking in the match. G'day, player. How you doing?
Yeah, g'day, Brett. How you going? I am over here at the Adelaide Oval. It's me and about 8 or 9 pigeons.
Yep.
And that's about all that's here. Not even Michelangelo Rucci, who I thought lived at the Adelaide Oval, is here yet.
It's always, I reckon, a great time, you know, to travel and do the footy, and often sometimes we'll get to a game maybe 2 or 3 hours early, and there's very few curtain raisers these days. I reckon it's a great time to just take in everything, the calm before the storm.
No doubt whatsoever, and it is a big, a huge game over here. When you have a look at, you know, the Collingwood side of it, first up, obviously Dane Swan's 250th game, which we'll speak a little bit more about very shortly. But so, and the fact that they've played in those couple of games the last couple of weeks and not got a result, I don't think that they've lost any favours from anyone. They were magnificent both against Fremantle and Hawthorn, but they need to actually start, just slotting the 4 points away and winning a couple of these games. And it's not going to be easy over here. And the flip side of that is that we know the emotions that have been running through, you know, Adelaide and the city for a week now. Mm. Neither of their sides have actually been on display. I was up in Sydney last Thursday night for the game at the SCG, and so it was all done for Port Adelaide prior to last weekend's round. So they haven't had their opportunity to really be on display since Philip Walsh's passing. So it's going to be an emotional packed night, I think, as well.
It will be. I mean, watching and listening to Ken Hinckley yesterday, Terry, it was, you know, I think I watched it about 2 or 3 times, and it was just raw. It was Ken answering the questions, and clearly it has affected him, as it would, and everyone shows their emotions very differently. But he made the point, and, you know, not too many coaches would have been in this situation where it's, you know, you play a game, you're planning for the next. You are very much drilled in, focused on the job at hand because of the quick turnaround. And just to make that comment that he just hasn't really been attuned to his normal sort of day-to-day coaching planning this week. And I suppose that's the unknown for he and his team tonight, who, well, we keep saying every week is becoming like a mini final for them.
It is. And it's difficult when you're the boss as well, because, I mean, you're the one who's meant to be driving and leading the way. But, I mean, you've still got all the feelings and all the emotions that's going through everyone else. So it is actually hard sometimes to be able to drive the ship. And I really do feel for Ken, because he's in it probably even prior to all this. He was in a position where, for the first time in his senior coaching career, he's been under some real stress and some real heat and pressure that the job brings to you. And, yep. You know, they were expected to be a top 4 side, not performing anywhere near that expectation. And then, clearly, I mean, this is a much, much bigger issue. But you throw all those sort of things on top of each other, and you're, as I said, running the ship. It's a big task, and, something that I'm sure that he hopes that he never has to go through again.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to take your calls, as always, with Terry Wallace ploughing in on a Thursday, 9429 1116. A few topics that Plough certainly wants to bring up. But just those ins tonight, we know Port Adelaide have brought back Tringove, O'Shea, Cleary, Need, and Carl Amon. Carl Ollett with a back injury. Cracker, Moore, Jonas, and Colgan have been omitted. And, of course, for the Pies, they haven't made a change. So they go in unchanged. They're keen to win on the road, where they have been able to do in the last period of time. Which way are you slightly leaning?
Slightly leaning towards Collingwood. I've never been someone, Brett, who likes to sort of see 4 or 5 changes to a team. I just think it unbalances and unsettles things. When you have a look at most of the changes with from Port Adelaide, with the exception of Alapati Carlisle,
yep,
who would have taken Cloak, I would have thought so. But with the exception of him, it's sort of their bottom enders out and, you know, the other bottom enders coming sort of back in. So from a team point of view, I don't think the team looks much better or worse on paper with the 5 changes, but just sometimes 5 changes just unsettles the way that your side plays and structures and things like that. So from that point of view, I think Collingwood are more settled. I'll be interested, do they play Brody Grundy? I mean, I just noticed that he was an emergency, or don't they? Yeah, we won't know that until we're ready to just about jump tonight, but that'll be an interesting one to follow as well. When you look through Port Adelaide, they are good enough, and you look at the 2 squads, I think the Port Adelaide squad is every bit the equal to the Collingwood squad. But what Collingwood are doing at the moment, BP, is they're playing with a real consistency of the pressure that they're bringing game day. They're closing down time and space for opposition teams,
yeah,
not allowing them to do what they want to do. You can't say that that same consistency is there when I have a look at the Port Adelaide side. The names are there. They're the same names that got them to a preliminary final last year, but they're not playing with anywhere near that consistency. I mentioned to you that I was up in Sydney last week for the game up there. Have a listen to this for a stat. This was a halftime stat that I took last week up there. Now, Josh Kennedy for the Swans had had 12 kicks in the first half, kicked a couple of goals, you might recall, in that first quarter of the game. So he'd had 12 kicks by himself. Ebert, Boak, Gray and Wines. I mean, they're their core of their midfield. Those four blokes had had 10 kicks up until halftime of that game up in Sydney. Now, they can't win unless their stars are performing better than that. Ollie Wines had 12 hand passes or something along those sort of lines, but there just wasn't the depth in being able to win the ball and break a line with some nice kicking skills. And unless they can get that consistency, you've got to pick Collingwood.
Yeah, you certainly do. It's been hard to read Port Adelaide from one quarter to the next, and we can see the frustration for Ken Hinckley all season. We all thought that Port Adelaide would at least retain their status as a top four side, maybe even jump a little bit higher, but it just goes to show a new season starts. There are new challenges, teams who are keen to make some inroads on the ladder. It's a hard, hard competition. Now, just some of the topics around for the week, Terry. The sling tackle, it's obviously been a hot topic of discussion here on SEN. Are you confused or is it straightforward for you?
Well, look, that's where I'm sort of going a little bit today. I've got about four or five things that I'm pretty confused about with AFL football, and some of them are with our coaches and some of them are with our fans and some of them are with the MRP. And look, that's one of them for me. I just could not understand. I thought I'd got my head around what was actually going on, Brett, with the rules. I thought it was very similar to a bump. That the fact that we now know that if you choose to bump in a game, bumping is fine, but if you choose to bump and that bump causes damage to an opponent, you know, through a head-high knock, well, you are responsible for the actions for that bump. Now, I thought we got to the stage with the sling tackle where it was very, very similar. If you decide to pin somebody's arms and drive them into the ground, that's not illegal. You know, if they get an arm out and it's just play on, things happen. But if you decide to pin their arms, drive them headfirst into the ground and they get damage, similar to the bump, I thought that was you would have the consequences of your actions and therefore you would be outed. And that's exactly what happened with the Robbie Gray incident. And I just can't understand it. And I've heard some experts that I really admire their thoughts on AFL football, but some sort of saying that one guy three pirouetted, so there was a three-step movement, and the other one was a one-and-a-half-step movement. Well, leave me out of that. I mean, how are we going to judge what that one's one-and-a-half, but that one's two-and-a-quarter? I don't think you can judge it like that. I think it's got to be much, much more simple for everyone, certainly for the supporters who love the game and want to know how it's going, but for the players and the coaches playing the game, it's got to be clearer cut than that.
Absolutely. I'm looking at the visual in my mind still. We've seen it repeated and repeated all week, and you know, slung 360, arms pinned, driven into the turf. Absolutely identical. I mean, yeah, you could pull it back, really slow-mo it, and see just a slight difference in tackling style, but really very much the same. So, yeah, that's the problem with our game at times, Terry, though. There's just, you know, it's just too much grey in interpretation.
Well, I'm throwing that one out there, I'm going to throw out a few today, and people might be confused with their own things about their own footy club and how they're going about things, so they can ring in and give us a call. But I'll throw four straight up.
Okay,
first one was obviously the sling tackle. Very confused about that. I'm really confused, and I just heard the break where Hurdy was speaking about he doesn't need the club to come out. How do we judge James Hurd's coaching with this WADA situation hovering over the top of it? Now, if the WADA situation wasn't there, I'm sure we would be analysing and scrutinising James Hurd's position as coach a lot more than what we are at the moment. And the reason why I sort of say that is they've played finals last year. The year before, they were two games better and would have played finals if not for being withdrawn from the competition. They're well, well down on that at the moment. But we know there are other reasons. So should we be judging him at all? Do we need to wait until this whole thing scenario is out the way before we can judge him? I'm a bit confused about what's the right thing to do and what's the wrong thing to do when we're actually looking at that. So I'm interested in our listeners' position on that one as
well. 9429 1116. Brad Scott, back yesterday.
Yeah, well, I think we've got some audio back there that we might be able to play about Brad Scott speaking about the press and just how things were handled there.
Everyone's wrong at times. I mean, you guys were all wrong this time last year when, you know, you said we were really struggling and then we made the top four. You're also wrong when you said a top four result means that, you know, we're going to win the flag this year. I sincerely hope you're wrong again right now, and we'll prove you wrong in the second half of the year. We've got a lot of work to do to get that right.
I had a bit of a giggle about it because coaches always tell us that they don't really listen to anything that we say, and it doesn't matter. But when it suits them, they certainly do, and they'll use it as ammunition all the time. And obviously Brad's been laid up for a while, so he's probably been listening more often than what he perhaps would have during a full-on coaching job. So I'm a little bit confused about North Melbourne in general. You know, where are they at? What's going on? I mean, they've got an easy run home. Can they actually stack up anything to get themselves back into this season as Richmond did last year? They don't need to win nine in a row like Richmond did last year, but can they actually get some momentum built back up? Where are they at as a footy club? They're confusing me. The last one, Hawks supporters. I want you to ring up and tell me why I keep hearing Hawks supporters having a crack at Ben Stratton and they're not sure about where he sort of sits in the side. But every time I see him, I was over here a few weeks ago, he beat Eddie Betts quite comfortably in the game. Then I go back to last Friday night and he was sensational on Jamie Elliott. Every time I see him, he just gets the job done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you.
Hawthorn supporters, where do you sit with him?
No doubt. Ploughing in, Terry Wallace, there's some topics for you. Got some great prizes to give away. 9429 1116, just on the SMS. Boys, Marley Williams will be laid out. Sharonberg to come in. There's some mail. We'll see if that comes to fruition tonight. More of your calls after the break with Terry Wallace here on 1116 SEN. Ploughing in with Terry Wallace, who is at live this afternoon from the Adelaide Oval. 9429 1116. What are you confused about in footy? Terry's mentioned a few topics. A sling tackle. James Hurdon, how to judge his coaching at the moment in the face of the whole WADA investigation. Brad Scott, and talking to the media yesterday about North Melbourne and their prospects, and why Hawks supporters are doubting Ben Stratton when he keeps beating good players. A couple on the SMS. Ben Stratton needs to stop using the double-fisted punch and take more marks. He's a strong mark. And Terry, I'd more question why Suckling is getting a game in front of Hartung. Billy is a gun. That's from Matt in Point Cook Plough.
Well, I suppose the only thing is that they do play a different role in the side, don't they? So, and I suppose I really like Billy Hartung's footy, but with Hill and Smith probably in exactly the same role that he plays, it's just, can you play another one of them? I think at this stage of his career, Suckling's got more ability to be a bit varied in his roles. I was over here when they played Adelaide the other week and he played as the high half forward that day rather than the running defender that we're used to seeing him. Mind you, I thought he'd come on the other night and really had an impact when he actually came on against the Pies and was one of the reasons they got over the line. So I can understand an argument for either of the two boys.
Let's get to some calls. John in Pascoe Vale, what do you got for us there, John?
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to raise this sling tackle situation. I was just listening to what Terry Wallace was saying before in regards to it. Do we need, looking at the situation with the rugby player that actually ended up paralysed from almost the waist down, whatever, do we need to see something like that in order to accept, to actually make this rule viable in the game?
Terry?
Well, I think the thing for in our game is that we don't pick them up and drop them on their heads anyway. But I think personally, it would be very, very simple to sort of say that if you lock the guy's arms away and you drive his head into the ground, you are responsible for the actions. Now, Jay Schultz did that last week. There was nobody that was more worried about Teddy Richards than Jay Schultz. So we're not saying that whether it was Bryce Gibbs a couple of weeks ago or whether it was Jay Schultz, we're not suggesting or sitting back here and sort of saying that they're horrible people for what they've done. But we have to protect the bloke's head that's playing the ball. And I think, personally, the rule is very, very simple, as it was simplified. And some of us, you know, were a bit up in arms about the bump early on in the piece, and we'll be taking, you know, a great part of our game out. But I think now we know absolutely where that sits. Yeah, of course you can still bump, but you're responsible for your action, as you should be with a tackle.
Another John's in Carlton. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Hi, boys. I'm a bit confused. If we're talking about looking after the player in terms of them hitting their head on the ground and we're looking at changing the tackling rules, why do we have AstroTurf 1 metre ringing the boundary line, 1 metre inside the ground, inside the boundary line?
Yeah, different venues, Terry. I'm just trying to think, you know, travelling around the country, it all differs a little.
Yeah, well, we had an injury at Etihad, didn't we, not that long ago from that. I've never seen anyone actually hit the AstroTurf sort of head first and cause any sort of concern or problems. But I don't think this one's much that we're not really changing any rules, are we? I mean, as we sort of said, you can tackle, yeah, you can lock their arms away, you can tackle exactly how you want to tackle, but if you throw their head into the ground, there comes a consequence with that, because we have to protect the player. We just can't afford to have blokes going off to hospital on a semi-regular basis.
Also on the sling tackle, Luke in Essendon with a view. Hi, Luke.
Hi. Yeah, I'm sort of confused as well, just by the inconsistency of the match review panel. It's kind of, not just them as well. Tom Bell made a very similar tackle to Bryce Gibbs in the last quarter. I can't remember who it was on. I'm just a bit unsure of why the injury caused has anything to do with the suspension. Like, if Tom Bell was unlucky, that tackle could have caused an injury and he would have got suspended. But it didn't, so he didn't. If that makes sense, Bryce Gibbs did just because he was unlucky that Robbie Gray got injured.
Yeah, but I still think that that's the way that we've got to play it. And same as the bump again. Like, sometimes you can bump and you can miss by an inch of doing some form of damage, but you didn't do the damage, so you don't do the time. I don't have any issue with that. This is not really about the tackler. This is about protecting the bloke who's actually going and winning first use of the ball. Remember, this is a guy who's gone in and won the ball. The other bloke sweated on him or got there secondary to that cause. So we've got to be able to protect the bloke who's going for the ball, as we've got to be able to do, as we tell all our juniors, when they're playing the game. If you go and win the ball, we'll protect you as much as what we possibly can. So I don't have any problem with the fact that if one does the similar thing and there's no damage done, no problem whatsoever, it's just play on. That's the luck of the draw. But if you choose to do that type of tackle and it does damage, you know you're responsible. So go back to Tom Bell. Tom Bell has chosen to do that type of tackle. He's lucky. He's lucky, because if he had have done the damage from that type of tackle, well, therefore, he would have got suspended. So that's the risk that you take if you want to drive them headlong into the ground.
Ploughing you with Terry Wallace. He's live in Adelaide. Ty is live in Springvale. Hi, Ty.
Yeah, hi, guys. James Heard, Terry, I heard you talk about James Heard. I think he has to be judged purely on his performance on the field. I mean, they've had this going on for, you know, 3 to 4 years now. So I'm sure as a club they've dealt with it and they've got on with the job. So at some stage, he surely has to be judged by his performance on the field. And if you look at Bomber last year, you know, Bomber had the same team hanging over him, and he's managed to get the team up and going pretty well. So it's got to come back to performance.
Yeah, the only thing that I would say about that is the fact that as soon as the WADA one came over this club, they haven't played with the same zest or passion whatsoever. So I do think that it's still having an impact on them. I go back 12 months ago. I know that Bomber really lightened things up there, tried to make it a fun place to go. And you can sit back and sort of say, well, why can't James do the same? But they'd worked through a process. They'd got their minds on what they needed to do and try to work through that. Just the second that they thought it was over and done, and they thought that they might have beaten the rap, and then all of a sudden Wada's come over the top. They haven't been the same group of players. So how much can you blame, and I'm not talking about the original situation about James and where the blame lies or where it doesn't lie there. I'm just talking about the coaching factor of now. How much blame can you put on James Hird that these players are just mentally shot from this WADA situation? I don't think, personally, I don't think you can judge him at the moment. I just think that it's become too much of an impost on the playing group.
And as we head to the break, I mean, it is tough, isn't it? Unless you're on the inside of a footy club, trying to judge whether a coach can coach, it's only the people internally, the players, the staff. I mean, we speculate, and James Hird is probably, he may be the last. The way coaching is going, Terry, that just comes straight out of being a champion player into being a coach, considering what clubs are doing now to really make sure they get the appointments right. We'll take a break. More of Ploughing In with Terry Wallace. More of your calls coming up next here on 11:16 SEN. We are Ploughing In with Terry Wallace. He's in Adelaide before the Port Adelaide Collingwood clash tonight, 9:42, 9:11:16. Plenty on the line. What's the weather conditions like, Player, for tonight?
Absolutely perfect for those who are going to go home and sit down and watch it. We should have a ripping night. It's been blue skies over here all day, Brett, and just moderate, really slight wind. So it looks like being a perfect night.
Live on SEN from 7 tonight. Chris in Point Cook, I think that is. G'day, Chris.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm just reading about Ben Stratton. I was actually surprised when Plough just said Hawthorn supporters are having a go at him. I was just having a chat with someone a couple of weeks ago, and I reckon, I don't understand why he's never considered to be in an All-Australian squad or something. He hardly ever gets beaten.
Well, that's how I rate him, but I see a lot of different sort of social media sites and things like that where I just didn't think he was as respected as... Look, and now this is one of the most respected teams going around, and I just kept having people sort of coming up on sites and sort of saying, I'm not sure whether he should be in our best 22 and things like that. And as I said, every time I go along, he's super brave, absolutely super courageous, and probably more so than most in that side, is prepared to give away his own natural game just to get the job done for the team. And, you know, you can't have 22 players in a side who are all the stars, who are all going to just go and win their own ball and play to their own natural styles. And he's just one to me that is just such a role player for that side. And the other thing that he does is he plays tall and he plays small. So, if something happens, somebody goes down, one of the big boys goes down, he can play on a taller key forward, but can also do the job on the small blokes as well.
Jason in Geelong, you've also got a view on Ben Stratton and the Hawks.
Yeah, I think his nickname should be the Mailman, because to me he always delivers. Like he's playing on the key forwards, playing on the small forwards, and as you guys said, he very rarely gets beaten. I just reckon the blokes that are saying that he punches too much or does like that, you could probably argue everyone in the back line if Hawthorn probably punches a little bit too much, except the exception of Brian Lake probably. But, if that's his job to get the ball outside 50, then, it doesn't matter how he gets it out the ball, mark it or punch it, as long as he gets the ball moving forward, I think he's doing a great job.
Well, the only reason I brought him up, BP, is that I was sort of seeing that sort of reaction to him, and I didn't think it was right. So I just thought that, here's a player, a premiership player, who really does deserve actually a little bit more credit and love from his supporter base. And well, I'm not saying everyone, and we know that how these things sort of work at times, but I just think that sometimes some supporters go along and they don't see the things that are off the ball. They don't see the defensive aspects of the game that certain players are doing. And they might pick up the paper the next day or when they get home and sort of see that he's only had his 9 possessions or 11 possessions. But that doesn't always tell a true story.
Indeed. One more on Ben Stratton. Paul in Hoppers Crossing. What's your view on Ben Stratton, Paul?
Hey, mate. Yeah. A lot of people are forgetting about the grand final last year when the game was over. It must have been about a minute or so left. He backed back in the pack, got the free kick, took a mark. I mean, and he's been our most consistent player, comfortably back line. And on Saturday night, if it wasn't for him, we probably would have lost. There you go. He was our best backman by a mile on Saturday night.
good to hear that he's getting some real respect out there. And that's what I sort of said. I just think that sometimes people just don't see the whole picture of what players are able to do. And I feel, I'm the same. I thought his job on Jamie Elliott the other night was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, great stuff. I just went on the SMS here, Terry. Apparently, it's all just in relation. We changed track a little bit to North Melbourne. It's all Mad Jack Dawes' fault. I bet there won't be many changes from North. Many other players have been terrible, but the coach only highlighting Mad Jack Dawes this week. Now, I'd covered that game against the Gold Coast. So they left Ben Brown out. Mad Jack gets an opportunity. He's been solid without being spectacular in the VFL. I think he kicked 20-odd goals in his last 10 matches. Ben Brown had been maybe in a little bit out of form, but that's the conundrum for North Melbourne. Waite, Brown, Aaron Black, who can't get him, Mad Jack Dawes, and how they make this forward line work.
No doubt whatsoever. You were up there live. I certainly watched the game on telly. Do a few of the North Melbourne forwards need to pull their heads in a little bit when it comes to Magic, or does Magic just need to learn the game a little bit more? Because, geez, I thought there was some petulance there with some of their players who were sort of, shrugging their shoulders, and sort of everything sort of seemed to be pointing to Magic not doing his part, yeah. And it almost gave some of those other blokes a little bit of an out. And I've got to say, some of them really, failed to perform at all on the day as well.
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting one. I mean, he just gets these little fits and starts and can't seem to, play a number of games in a row. And look, your performance dictates that, obviously, but he's still so raw in so many ways. And you look and you think, God, this guy could be anything. I suppose it's how long North Melbourne are going to persist with him in their structure and their setup. They recruited this year to maybe think they could go a little step further and maybe pinch a premiership. We'll get into a grand final, but whether it backfires, we'll have to wait and see. Jared's in Moorabbin. Hi, Jared.
It's not Jared, it's Joe.
Jared, that's what I said, yep.
No, Joe.
Oh, no, Joe.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate.
That's all right. I got a question for Terry. The only thing, like I'm 58, the only thing that hasn't improved with AFL, with Aussie rules, from, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago, is the set shot kicking for goal. I reckon it's actually worse. And I see so many games now where I reckon these missed set shots for goal, from 20, 30 metres out, dead in front or slight angles, are actually costing clubs games, where they've had most of the play and they've won in most positions, but they can't convert. And it's not a solution, it's a suggestion. Because of the way that the ball is shaped, the contour of it, it comes at both ends, it sort of comes into it like a point. There's not much margin for error. Is there any merit in the clubs teaching their players to kick the old flat punt like Peter Hudson? And he rarely missed. He was very, very accurate.
It's interesting because, things that go out of the game can sometimes come back into the game. There's been so many things. And you talk about games being lost. We've seen grand finals being lost in recent years of teams just not kicking straight and not taking their chances. So it does impact. And look, there's been so many things that have been tried, BP. I remember when I was coaching at stages, we actually made the goalposts the distance shorter so that you actually trained at a narrower mark. We had other stages where we actually put a target right in the middle, so let's sort of call it hockey straps, three-quarters of the way up the goalpost with a target right in the middle of the goals so that it got them sort of trying to aim more precisely and directly right in the middle of the goals. Gee, it's a lot of it, you can do whatever you like that, but it's the it's above the shoulders at times.
Yeah, it is, and the Collingwood have been scrutinised probably more than anyone with Jesse White and Travis Clark. They'll be on display tonight at the Adelaide Oval. More of Terry Wallace ploughing in coming up on halftime, 9-4-2-9-11-16. Ploughing in with Terry Wallace this afternoon live at the Adelaide Oval for Port Adelaide and Collingwood tonight from 7 o'clock. You'll hear that on SEN with Anthony Hudson, Matt Granlund and Nick Maxwell. Plenty more callers plough on the line. Let's get to a few of those. Brian in Piercedale. Hi, Brian.
Just in regards to Hurd, I think the way he coached under extreme pressure in 13, there's no doubt the guy is capable of coaching under pressure. But I think there's one thing that's been totally overlooked here is that, you know, all the players that are under the investigation have really, really dropped their form, even the players that don't play for Essendon since the WADA thing. But also, the one thing that should be of utmost importance here is now what the players want. And if they don't want Hurdy there between now and the WADA verdict, then he shouldn't be there. And if they do, then he should, because this is unprecedented what they've been inflicted by the club. And it should be 100% what gets them through the next 4 months. What do you think?
I think that's an absolute reasonable call. Yeah, I think for everything that they've been through, absolutely the club has to support them 100%. And all that we're hearing is that they're completely supportive of James from that point of view. And until we hear something different, I think that's the end of the story. But as I sort of said, that was why I was a little bit confused by it, because there are some people that really want to judge him on how things are right at this very, very minute. But I find that very difficult to do with the circumstances that they find themselves in. And look, I know a lot of people will sort of say, well, he created those circumstances, and that whether that is the case, whether that's not the case, that'll certainly play out. But I still don't think that the judgment call is fair whilst there's this cloud over the footy club.
Thanks, Brian. David in Carrumdan's also on James Hurd. Hi, David.
Yeah, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to say about James Hurd as well. Big part of the side this year has been a big loss of Ryder, where he can ruck and go forward. And I think that the club hasn't recruited a gun small forward for maybe 5 years. I think we haven't got a player that can kick the freaky goals and get at the bottom of the feet of Danner and that.
Spot on. And, yeah, I've sort of been in that list management space, Brett, that I've been in. They've had probably four or five players that they've tried to fill that role, but have not really had anyone that's successfully taken that on. Look, their forward line has been a disaster for quite some time now, and they just can't seem to get that part of the ground right at all.
Yeah, it's been a tough one there, the entries inside forward 50, not getting the result. Connor in Box Hill. Hi, Connor.
Hi, how are you? I was just sitting back here listening to some of the comments about North, and I feel that their main drop or lack of intensity comes from not enough physicality around the ball and around the opposition ball carrier. Their tackling is one of the worst in the AFL, which is going to get you nowhere if you want to beat the top sides in September.
Yeah, I think their physicality around the ball is actually okay, but what you're sort of saying around the ball carrier and putting pressure and closing down space and tackling, that is probably not to the level that it needs to be. I think when you have a look at the type of player that they've got in and you have a look at their stoppage work over the last 2 or 3 weeks and contested footy work, that's been fine. There have been no problems there with that area of their game at all. But they have got that that sort of tough, old-fashioned type of football that will win first use of the ball. But whether their pressure or their ability to spread after that and put the type of pressure on that we're seeing Collingwood doing on a regular basis, that can be certainly questioned.
Terry, massive weekend of footy ahead. What are you most intrigued about? What are you looking forward to seeing?
Well, there's some ripping games, aren't there? I mean, there's some games that you really sit there. This could be a week where you could have four or five clear upsets in the round. The North Melbourne Geelong game is the intriguing game for me because I just sense, well, I think it's last chance cafe for North Melbourne. I think if they can't get it right against Geelong haven't played for 3 weeks. And I think when you have a look, BP, of the games where teams have come off a bye and they've played against teams that had played the week prior, there's been 9 games over the 3 weeks of byes, and 8 of the 9 have been won by the side that played the week prior. So the challenge is for Geelong, coming off a couple of weeks off, is to buck what has been a fairly significant trend. So last chance cafe for me for North, but clearly the match of the round is the one down in Tassie, and fantastic for Tassie supporters that they get such a great game and what could quite easily be the grand finalist.
It certainly could. And I reckon 2 big games, one for the Bulldogs going to Cairns. I mean, to get to 9-5, the Gold Coast with a better lineup, certainly have enjoyed a bit of success playing up in Cairns. And for the Tigers tomorrow night, this little 3-week window, GWS, they've got Carlton tomorrow night, then St Kilda. So the Bulldogs and Richmond want to tick these off tomorrow night, this weekend.
I think the Tigers will. I think that they've... I know that they were poor for 3 quarters the other day, but I was really pleased that they found a way to win, because that was the type of game you go back earlier in the season when they lost to the Bulldogs and they lost to Melbourne. That was the type of game when you're 15 points down at three-quarter time that they would have lost earlier in the season and seasons past. So there was a bit of maturity about that that victory. And the Doggies, it's a real danger game for them. They haven't been great, and it's okay to win ugly over a couple of weeks. They're playing fantastic footy about 5 or 6 weeks ago. Last couple I've seen them live, and they've just been going. Carlton last week had a lot of players out, and really, I mean, it was just hard work to get the job done. So that'll be a danger game for the Bulldogs, no doubt.
Absolutely. Enjoy the game tonight. You're just favouring the Pies. Massive crowd. It's going to be an interesting night. Emotion there with Port Adelaide and Ken Hinckley. And as you've mentioned, that last roll of the dice at 5-8, if they're going to have any impact on the top eight, but certainly a bigger story outside of just the footy tonight. Terry, great to play with you. Enjoy the weekend's footy.
Thanks, BP, and congratulations once again to Dane Swan. 250 games. My, he's been a magnificent player for that footy club.